Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. The end of the year is nearly here with almost all major economic and policy events out of the way. As investors prepare to shut down for the holidays and plan for the year ahead, there are a few final economic data points and Fed news to digest for those plans. So joining us today for our final CIO strategy snapshot conversation of 2025. And to discuss his Word of the Year blog, glad to welcome back Jason Draho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, here we are, late December of 2025. Thank you very much for dropping by on this Wednesday morning to spend some time with our listeners and clients as we close out the series for the year.
Yeah, it's good to be here. It's hard to believe it's already the end of the year, Another calendar year in the books.
And Jason, before we turn off our microphones for 2025, a lot to cover here this morning with our listeners. So let's begin with the economy. We did receive the November jobs data and some from October as well, plus other data in the past few days. So we've been digesting a lot of data points. What does it say about the state of the economy, the data we've been receiving lately?
So the most important stuff is the payroll data or the jobs data. So we got a complete report for November, which included the payrolls growth, which has come from the establishment survey, as well as update on the unemployment rate that's going to be based off of the household survey. There was also data for October for payrolls, but not the unemployment rate because the household survey wasn't conducted because the government shut down. So the takeaway is, I think, kind of consistent with what we've seen, kind of recently, relatively soft labor market. The data does not indicate necessarily further softening, maybe even some slight signs of stabilization and improvement. The October data, at least at the headline numbers, paint a fairly negative picture, in part because there were significant government worker layoffs. These are delayed layoffs, so those who accepted kind of buyout packages earlier in the year, it wasn't until October that they showed up. So that caused sort of a big surge in terms of the kind of government employee, drag. It was about 162,000, whereas the total for the month was 105,000. So if you actually think of like the net change for the private sector, it was actually, positive. For November, the jobs number came in better. It was at 64,000, which is kind of a little bit better than the consensus, 50,000. If we strip out the noise of both the government shutdown, obscuring some of the data, but also those delayed layoffs, the three-month kind of moving average of private sector payroll growth is now up to about around 75,000. For context, most economists would now think that the trend rate of job growth based on just sort of normal demographic immigration factors should be in the range of maybe 60 to 80,000, give or take a little bit. So it's actually a 75,000 three-month moving average for the private sector is sort of consistent, with that view. So that's, the positive. The unemployment rate did tick up. It's now up to 4.6% versus the last reading we have for September. We don't have October, which is 4.4%. And wage growth slowed. So there's definitely some signs of slackening in the labor market. The participation rate has increased, so there's more people coming back. So the story is, yes, there's decent job growth that is a positive, but the fact that the unemployment is rising also suggests that there's still the fair amount of increasing slack between and sort of gap between the supply and demand of labor. So the net result is, I think, for those concerned about the labor market kind of falling off a cliff or so really decelerating, based on the data we got earlier in the summer, I think those fears have been alleviated quite a bit. You can sort of see some signs of perhaps things are starting to inflect a little bit more positively, but it's far too soon to kind of draw definitive conclusions. If we then think about some of the other data, like retail sales we got for October, the key thing there is that the headline number was kind of suggested some mild contraction. The control group, that's kind of the more volatile components, whether it's food, energy, even auto sales, that actually grew 80 basis points month after month. There is some quirks in terms of how the data is calculated because of the from the month over month effect from September to October. But overall, the picture suggests that the consumer is continues to hold up well. It was relatively elevated during the summer, so we're seeing a bit of a step down at least to the October data. The higher frequency data that we can see for credit card spending, but also especially around the retail sales or holiday sales, you know, reports for the major retailers suggest that spending is tracking along what their kind of forecast going into the holidays, which is about 4% growth. Not a boom year, but certainly, you know, solid by kind of any measure. So you add those two things together, consumers in aggregate continue to spend, a labor market that definitely showing signs of stabilization, at a more modest pace of job growth. That sort of reinforces the view that ultimately, you know, certainly recession risk is remains quite low. And given what we see for the pipeline early next year in terms of incremental fiscal stimulus, larger tax refunds, that the economy looks, you know, in relatively decent shape and then poised to accelerate into next year. So that's the picture we're getting. Other parts of the economy, like, you know, manufacturing, production, that's been, you know, relatively tepid. There's no real sort of acceleration there. It's still an economy that's being sort of led by the consumer, holding up, you know, relatively well. If that were to change, if that were to, you know, the consumer at the higher end in particular were to kind of crack, then there's certainly more vulnerabilities. But overall, the picture still looks, you know, relatively constructive and reinforces our view that next year's growth will be, you know, around the 2% trend rate. And as we move into the year, at least in the first half of the year, growth is likely to accelerate because of the policy stimulus.
So, Jason, with that assessment of the U.S. economy, and there was a lot there, thank you for that breakdown. Let's turn focus to the Fed for a few moments. Since you and I last spoke, we did see that the Fed cut interest rates another 25 basis points. A CIO had expected this heading into the meeting last week. However, the real focus was on the guidance for future cuts. So with that, what was CIO's takeaway from the meeting last week, and did it change as a result of the data?
Before going into the meeting, we had sort of mapped out different data points or parts of the communication, whether it's commentary from Fed Chair Jay Powell, the statement from the Summer of Economic Projections, and so the details therein. Is there a sign that would suggest that would tilt the scales one way or another in terms of where the Fed is going? Into the meeting, or the expectations going into the meeting, was that this would be a hawkish cut. So the Fed would cut 25 basis points, but they would be hawkish, sort of signaling that, you know, we're perhaps done for the time being and maybe longer. Relative to those expectations, you know, the view was that the Fed was a little bit dovish. I think that's, you know, that gets into semantics or kind of, you know, subjective interpretations of whether you think they are or not. When we looked at various criteria, including, like, did they insert some statements into the, or words or clauses in the statement suggesting that they were heightened concerns, or the risks are tilting more in one direction, or do they want to take sort of a measured approach to cutting rates? We didn't see enough sort of indicators that we had pre-specified to suggest that this is a dovish Fed, and therefore they would be continuing a path towards cutting rates aggressively. Our base case view was they would have cut last week, and then they cut once more in the first quarter, more likely in March, you know, that they would take a bit of a pause, and nothing that came out of the meeting suggested otherwise. And probably the big real, maybe smoking gun piece of evidence in support of that is during Powell's press conference, both in his prepared remarks, but also then early on, he was asked a question about, kind of policy, how they feel about policy. He literally read a statement saying, you know, we think we're kind of in the range or the top end of the range of neutral, and therefore sort of assessing the data. That to me is a signal that if you think you're kind of around a neutral, then the need to cut becomes diminished. So it's a bit of a signal suggesting we will be pausing, at least in January, barring the data being significant one way or another. Given the labor market data we saw yesterday, certainly not enough to think to sort of warrant the Fed to move aggressively given the overall job growth. The unemployment rate ticking higher, some of the slackness does suggest the Fed has more work to do. So I think it's reasonable to look at a cut in sort of the March timeframe. Beyond that, then, market pricing doesn't have even a full cut until June. There's a lot of speculation on who will be the nominee for the next Fed chair. What will their approach be? So I think until there's sort of clarity, and that probably won't happen until some point in January, who the nominee would be, what their views on policy are, it's quite likely then, you know, we get one in Q1 and then, you know, nothing else for a while. And then it becomes much more sort of data dependent. If the economy is not slowing, if inflation is still, you know, well above 2% and only kind of coming down gradually, it's very plausible the Fed may not do anything. But that's kind of our view, is that, you know, the outcome of last week and the data we've had since then has not changed our view that the Fed will do one more cut in Q1, and then it will probably be more of a wait-and-see mode. It'll probably not do much until the next Fed chair is in place. And at that point, it's really contingent on what the data would allow them to do.
Okay, so that covers the Fed and CIO's outlook for monetary policy as we head into 2026. So, all right, let's end today, Jason, with your fifth annual Word of the Year blog. I'd cue in a drum roll if I could. So what, Jason, was your selection for the 2025 Wordy?
So first, I'd like to kind of recap what my prediction was a year ago this time. And it was roaring, as in sort of roaring in the 20s. Yeah, keep in mind, at that point, we had two consecutive years of the economy growing, you know, almost 2.8%. The stock market in both years had been up, you know, around 25%. And there was a lot of investment. There was kind of good momentum. And, of course, we've talked in the past about sort of a roaring 20s sort of regime that I think is you know, very much kind of plausible. And you know, at the start of this year, looked like very much on track to continue, subject to policy choices, subject to developments in AI. So that was my kind of rationale. I think very quickly I could sort of dispense it. The roaring did not end up being my kind of choice looking back on 2025 as the wordy. The word has really been used infrequently this year. There's obviously been other concerns about just the state of the economy, about other policy developments. And I'd say it's used less this year than it was the past 2 years. So that was kind of ruled out. One thing that I did sort of, you know, anticipate is that the first half of this year would be dominated by kind of, you know, Trump 2.0 kind of related policies as they come in and they adopt, you know, different measures, whether it's extending tax cuts, tariffs, things of that sort. Once that sort of, you know, played out, then the focus could turn to other factors. And if the economy was doing well, roaring could kind of come from behind, which I think, given where we are with the S&P up 17% approximately, year-end economy kind of, you know, still going decently solid, with good momentum going next year. The regime does feel like it's sort of back on the table to possibility, but certainly not a, you know, a serious candidate for the wordy this year. So if that wasn't the case, you know, what else, you know, would I pick? I think, you know, if I were to define this year, just trying to summarize the financial market performance this year, it comes down to two words. More than any other sort of driving performance, one is AI, which I guess is not necessarily a word, but like it's treated as a word, and tariffs. You know, for AI, it's clear that AI, the CapEx spending keeps getting kind of ratcheted higher. You know, further developments in models, you know, application adoption, you know, financing now, like how this AI investment is going to be financed. They've all had, you know, influence in sort of driving in the markets. Early in the year, the DeepSeek's news of, you know, kind of changed sort of perceptions of potentially like the cost of and efficacy of developing these models and, you know, the returns on investment. We've seen, obviously, in the past few months, the stories of increased debt financing, a reliance on debt financing, the sort of circularity among different major players, that sort of being a concern. So for good or bad, it's been a central story. Ultimately, to me, like, you know, the main argument against AI is that this is really the third consecutive year that it's been a dominant market theme. There's really nothing to me sort of distinct about AI's importance this year versus the past two. And could I think of the sort of the word of the year should really kind of capture something specific to this year, not as a, you know, you've been up three times, therefore you get it sort of situation. So it wasn't AI, and so my choice for this year was tariffs. You know, everyone expected tariffs to go higher with the new administration. I think what's been surprising is the manner in which they did, and also the kind of partial rollback. And if you look at the pattern of, you know, the tariff story this year, it does correlate, I think, you know, fairly well with the dynamics across financial markets, better than any other factor. You know, we anticipated tariffs to go higher as an effective tariff rate from around 2% at the start of the year, about 10%. You know, enough to cause some mild economic pain, but nothing, you know, too serious. You know, the markets definitely were not pricing, you know, an effective tariff rate of nearly 30%, which is what it would have materialized if all the tariffs, like the reciprocal tariffs announced on April 2nd, if they had been actually adopted. And so that led to them trying to price that possibility, led to this 20% correction in the S&P 500. But that sell-off reversed, you know, very quickly once those tariffs were delayed. And as we went through the spring and into the early summer, as various deals were struck between the U.S. and other countries, that would bring those tariff rates down. So the effective tariff rate got down to about 17%. You saw equities and risk assets kind of rally with it. So to me, the time series profile, the market performance this year correlates very well with kind of this, the development of tariffs and the sort of effective tariff rate. If that's the case, I think it's hard to sort of point to another word that it was sort of more influential for overall market performance this year. So tariffs is my wordy pick for 2025.
Okay, so Jason, that was looking back on 2025, the word you selected, tariffs. What is your prediction for the 2026 wordy and why?
So just want to remind our listeners that when I think of this as a prediction for the wordy, it's not meant to be a prediction of exactly what will happen with the economy or the markets. It's a prediction for like what sort of word will best capture a key dynamic that is, you know, kind of going on. So it's a that's, you know, a subtle but I'm finding an important distinction. So it could be something related to, you know, Trump 2.0 policies again, but like tariffs are already kind of in use this year. Tax cuts have been already passed. So it's not really obvious what, from the, you know, from a policy perspective, what the word would be. I think affordability is definitely front of mind or top of mind for the general public and certainly a political issue right now that could spill over into financial markets, but it really has to spill over through some indirect means of influencing, say, policy choices. So a possibility, but I think that's kind of a low possibility. A term right now that's very prevalent in financial markets, which kind of rules it out because it's an expression and not a single word, is running hot. The idea that policymakers, you know, with the Trump administration will try and stimulate growth going into the midterm elections, do what they can. You know, the Fed might also have policy running a little bit looser. All that would suggest, you know, you kind of run it hot. Now, that's definitely a possibility, but, you know, this time last year, there was a consensus view that we'd get sort of inflation scenario that not materialize. And so I think kind of run it hot, if you even treat it as a word, but like that might be a little optimistic that will play out. If it does, you know, bubble, you know, is a, you know, will be another kind of candidate for word of the year. But I tend to view kind of bubble as more of a description of what's going on. It is a driver of the, you know, kind of equity markets. It's also not clear to me that the, at all that the equities are in a bubble or kind of really at risk of a significant bubble. So I don't kind of rule that out as the word. This leads ultimately to the my prediction for 2026 is that productivity will be the, you know, word of the year. It is admittedly a bit wonky, and it's maybe a choice that only economists would really appreciate. But in my view, productivity growth, whether it's high or low or not, is maybe the most important economic factor driving the markets, policy, and bubble risk next year. And the real reason why is that, to me, it's kind of like this secret sauce that can connect the dots between, you know, AI, Fed policy, growth, inflation, you know, all of which will drive market performance, you know, next year. You know, for AI, you know, everyone expects AI to have these productivity improvements, but we actually need to start to see it have an impact on companies, you know, kind of bottom line, their operating performance. An enormous amount of money has been spent on AI capex, and concerns about that sort of return on capital, that return on investment, you know, continue to simmer. They're actually growing now that this sort of reliance more on debt financing. So any sign that we're going to see AI adoption accelerating, applications producing material economic benefits, ultimately like through productivity gains, that's kind of becomes critical for, I think, this AI thesis and concerns about AI investment actually, you know, alleviated to some extent. So it's really the key that I think it's critical to start to see those productivity gains. If you get productivity gains at an individual company level, you should aggregate up in the economy to have the economy overall more productive, which is usually unambiguously positive for the economy. It should be a good thing. You can grow faster without being inflationary. But you know, and it's maybe productivity is also explaining right now some of the disconnects we've seen this year between resilient growth and a labor market that's been relatively soft, especially the second half of this year. So again, that kind of plays a critical role. Productivity, I think, is also a central part of, you know, Fed policy for next year. And you don't have to take my word for it. Last week at the FOMC press conference, Fed Chair Jay Powell said as much. You know, the Fed updated their economic projections for next year where they took up their growth forecast 50 basis points. At the same time, the unemployment rate was forecast to be unchanged and inflation went down. That change is a pretty optimistic. You basically see you're going to get faster growth and a little less inflation than you anticipated, you know, 3 months ago. That's relatively optimistic. And when he was asked about it, Powell highlighted the fact that strong productivity, partly from AI, is a key factor in his forecast. The implicit part of this is that, you know, or what's left unsaid by Powell is that the FOMC really is kind of banking on productivity gains to help him kind of thread the needle between the cutting rates to support the labor market also not causing inflation to go higher. So again, productivity is key for the Fed. And it, in some way, it could even create a dilemma for the Fed if AI-related productivity gains really start to ramp up, or companies don't want to hire because they're trying to anticipate productivity gains from AI. You could have a situation where the labor market remains tepid. The Fed's dual mandate would suggest they have them keep cutting rates to support the labor market, even though it's not necessarily helping create demand for labor because of the AI structural story. Yet those rate cuts could actually help fuel, you know, kind of speculation in other parts of the market. So in multiple ways, AI or productivity is key to what's kind of perceptions about AI, this, you know, whether it's a bubble or not. It's key to Fed policy and what direction they might take. So it's a word that I think is already kind of somewhat front of mind of investors anticipating these gains. And now I think Jay Powell certainly, to me, kind of gave it a bit of a boost to come out strong on the gates in 2026 to validate the view that productivity is a key driver. So it is, to me, ultimately, sort of the key economic variable, the key word to watch for next year that could drive a lot of things. And if it's high, then it's a positive. If it isn't, that also matters because then that complicates the life for investors in thinking about AI and for Fed policy. So that's my choice is productivity, and that's the rationale for it.
Okay, so productivity is the prediction for 2026 as we're speaking here in December of 2025. And your selection for the 2025 wordy again, Jason, was tariffs. A very thought-provoking as we wrap up our series here for 2025. Thank you very much, Jason, for all of your contributions throughout the year. Really enjoyed these weekly conversations and do, of course, look forward to picking back up with the CIO strategy snapshot with you in January of 2026. Though in the meantime, Jason, I do enjoy the holidays and hopefully some well-deserved downtime.
Well, thank you, Dan, to you as well. Hopefully you have a wonderful break. And to our listeners, thank you for listening to us on a regular basis throughout the year. Happy holidays, and we will be communicating with you again early next year.
Absolutely. And yes, to your point, Jason, a big thank you to you, our listeners, our clients, for tuning in throughout the year. And with that, once again, I do want to point out Jason's blog, which we have been referencing today. The fifth iteration of the Word of the Year is available for you now up on ubs.com/CIO. For clients of UBS, please reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive Jason's 2025 Word of the Year blog directly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.